there is just foolishness. Do you want to be thrown in prison by the Crave?
No, I don't, Magnus snapped. Alec wanted to tell Xin Yun to shut up, but he knew Magnus wanted him to be kind to her, so he didn't tell Xin Yun to shut up. Instead, he said, when we get to Rome, I was thinking I should go to the Rome Institute.
So Magnus can't get thrown in prison?
Xin Yun began, this time angrily.
No, said Alec. I was going to get more weapons.
And carefully and discreetly ask if there's any word of demon-summoning activities that might lead us to the Crimson Hand. All we know is that we're going to Rome. It's a big city. But I was thinking it'd be better if I went on my own. They won't be suspicious of me.
Xin Yun opened her mouth.
Do it, said Magnus.
You're out of your mind, said Xin Yun.
I trust him, said Magnus. More than you. More than anybody. Alec worried that Magnus's trust was misplaced when they found an internet cafe near the Boboli Gardens and printed out what Isabel had sent him, which turned out to be a scan of the first few pages of the Red Scrolls of Magic.
Not to be overdramatic, said Magnus, but...
Why? I cannot believe we broke into a secret sanctum in a creepy dungeon to find something your sister would email us the next day.
Alec looked at the page on the glorious history of the Crimson Hand, in which the great poison commanded his followers to paint white stripes on horses and make the wooden mouse the national animal of Morocco.
It is ironic, he admitted.
It is not, said Xin Yun. That is not what irony.
Magnus gave her a look of fury, and she stopped. Alec shrugged.
No harm having another copy. Xin Yun's reading the book. Now I can read it, too.
It had to be easier than reading the map. As they walked back toward the car, Magnus glanced at Alec and tossed his keys from hand to hand.
We'll go faster if two of us are sharing driving duties, Alec offered, hopefully.
Ever driven stick before? Alec hesitated.
Can't be harder than shooting a bow and arrow while riding a horse at a full gallop.
It's definitely not, said Magnus. Besides, you have superhuman reflexes. What's the worst that could happen? He threw Alec the keys and slid into the passenger seat with a smile. Alec grinned and jogged over to the driver's seat. Magnus suggested some practice loops in the parking lot.
You have to lift your left foot as you're applying gas with the right foot, he said.
Alec looked at him.
Oh, no, he said dryly. I have to move both feet at the same time. How can I possibly handle such demands of my agility?
He turned back, applied the gas, and was rewarded with a high-pitched screech like a banshee in a trap. Magnus smiled, but did not say anything. Soon enough, of course, Alec was maneuvering competently around the lot.
Ready to take the show on the road? Magnus asked.
Alec only answered with a smile as he peeled out. A whoop of delight and surprise escaped from his throat as the Maserati fishtailed on the narrow street. They turned onto a straightaway, and Alec punched the acceleration.
We are going very fast, said Xin Yun. Why are we going so fast?
The low, friendly growl of the little red convertible filled the air. Alec glanced over to see Magnus put on his sunglasses and rest his elbow on the door as he leaned over the side and smiled at the rush of the wind across his face. Alec was glad to be able to give Magnus a break. Also, he hadn't realized this kind of wild, dramatic driving was a thing available to him. When he thought of cars, he thought of Manhattan. Far too many vehicles, not nearly enough road, chugging slowly and unhappily through the veins of the city. There, being on foot was liberation. Here in the Tuscan countryside, though, this car was its own kind of liberation, a thrilling kind. He looked over at his unbearably handsome boyfriend, hair blown back and eyes closed behind his shades. Sometimes, his life was okay. He willfully ignored the grumpy warlock ride-along in the back seat. For the next hour, they followed the Apennines through the heart of Tuscany. To their left were sunset-soaked golden fields spanning to the horizon, and to their right were rows of stone villas on hilltops overlooking a green vineyard sea. Cypress trees whispered in the wind. It was black night by the time they reached what Magnus said was called the Chianti Mountain Range. Alec didn't look. He felt pretty confident handling the Maserati by now, but managing a stick shift along the many sharp turns while driving near the edge of a cliff in the dark was an entirely separate and existentially threatening experience. What made the situation even more harrowing was that the headlights only bought them a few dozen feet of visibility, so all they could see were a narrow stretch of road in the front, the sheer face of the mountain, and the cliff edge that led to the open sky. Only one of those options was any good. Alec managed to downshift correctly on the first few turns, but sweat stung his eyes. "Are you all right?" Magnus asked. "I'm great," Alec said quickly. He fought demons for a living. This was driving, a thing even mundanes did without any unusual talents or sense-enhancing runes. All he had to do was focus. He was holding onto the steering wheel too tight, and he jerked the stick every time he had to shift around a hard turn. Alec mistimed a particularly difficult bend that sent the car veering out of control. He tried to punch the accelerator and even out, but ended up hitting the brake, sending them spinning down a steep decline. The vista before them was not a welcome sight. It meant they were going right off a cliff. Alec threw an arm up to shield Magnus, and Magnus grabbed his arm. Alec had felt this strange, connected feeling once before. On a ship in troubled waters, Magnus reaching out for him, needing his strength. He turned his hand under Magnus's hand and linked their fingers, feeling nothing but the warm, strong impulse to reach back. The car had just skidded off the road and dipped over the side when it came to a sudden stop, the two spinning front wheels touching nothing but air and soft blue magic. It hovered for a moment and then righted itself and rolled back onto the narrow dirt path next to the road.
"I told you we were going too fast," said Xinyan mildly from the back seat.
Alec held on fast to Magnus's hand, his own clasped against Magnus's chest. A warlock's heart beat differently from humans. Magnus's heartbeat was a reassurance in the dark. Alec already knew it well.
"It's just a tiny little cliff," said Magnus. "Nothing we can't handle."
Alec and Magnus got out of the car. Magnus threw his arms out wide as if he were going to embrace the night sky. Alec walked to the cliff's edge and looked over, whistling at the long, sheer drop down to the ravine. He looked off to the side at a small dirt trail leading to a clearing jutting out from the cliff. He beckoned to Magnus.
"It's pretty dangerous driving at night. Maybe we should stay here."
Magnus looked around.
"Just here?
Camping could be fun," said Alec. "We can toast marshmallows. You'd need to summon supplies from somewhere, of course."
Xinyan had climbed out of the car and was coming over to join them.
"Let me guess," she said to Magnus in flat tones. "Darling, your idea of a camping is when the hotel doesn't have a mini bar."
Magnus blinked at her.
"I beat you to that joke," Xinyan informed him.
Magnus lifted his eyes to the night sky. Alec could see the silver curve of a crescent moon reflected in the gold of his eyes. It matched the sudden curve of Magnus's smile.
"All right," said Magnus. "Let's have fun."
Alec put down his copy of the Red Scrolls of Magic to behold the campsite Magnus had conjured. He'd assumed Magnus would conjure up accommodations that would be spacious enough to sleep too comfortably and tall enough for them to stand without hunching over. At least that was what Xinyan had done when she had summoned her own tent at her insistence. What Magnus had erected was not so much a tent as a pavilion, complete with curtains and scalloped edging. The spacious living quarters had two bedrooms, a bathroom, a common area, and a sitting room. Alec made a loop around the massive goatskin structure and discovered the kitchen was set up in the back next to a covered deck area complete with a dining set. An ancient Roman legion Aquila standard was staked next to the front door as a final touch, in tribute to what Magnus said was his "When in Rome" theme. Magnus opened the back flap and strolled out, looking satisfied.
"What do you think?"
"It's cool," said Alec, "but I can't help wondering, where did you get this much goat skin?"
Magnus shrugged.
All you need to know is, I believe in magic, not cruelty.
There was a sound of suction, and then a monstrous structure appeared out of thin air, blowing a ring of dust outward in every direction. Where Xin Yan's tent had been, now stood a two-story treehouse that blotted out a third of the sky. Xin Yan walked out of her upgraded living arrangements and glanced in Magnus's direction. They had engaged in an increasingly less subtle game of one-upmanship ever since they had tried on clothing at La Mercerie, supporting Alec's theory that perhaps all warlocks tested each other's power in a magic version of sibling rivalry. Magnus was clearly playing. Alec suspected that Xin Yan took the game a little more seriously, but he was loyally of the opinion that Magnus was the superior warlock.
"Love the turrets!"
Magnus called over cheerfully. It was hard to defeat Magnus with excess, Alec thought. He would just admire it.
"Fancy a midnight snack?"
They congregated at the fire pit on the other end of camp, just a few feet away from the cliff's edge. Magnus had originally built it, and Xin Yan had improved on it, so it was like a pyre for a Viking funeral. The gigantic blaze looked as if they were trying to send a signal up to Valhalla. Below the partially covered moon, a flotilla of clouds drifted in front of Mount Corno, the tallest in the Apennine Range. A swarm of fireflies danced just above their heads, and nature had come alive all around them, with crickets chirping and owls hooting to a steady rhythm, while the low, wary whistle of the wind floated up from the valley below. Somewhere in the distance, a pack of wolves joined the night symphony with a chorus of howls.
"They sound ornery," said Xin Yan.
"No," said Alec. "They're together. They're hunting."
"You're the expert on that," Xin Yan observed. "I was alone once and hunted."
"You were also in a cult once," Alec pointed out, then bit his lip. An edge appeared in Xin Yan's voice.
"Tell me, Shadow Hunter, where are the Nephilim when downworlders are in trouble?"
"Shielding us," said Magnus.
"You saw Alec in Venice?" "He was there because he's with you," Xin Yan snapped. "If he hadn't been with you, he wouldn't have been there. They stalk us and hurt us and leave us. When was it decided that a warlock child is worth less than the children of the angel?"
Alec did not know what to say. She threw up her hands and stood up.
"I apologize," she said. "I am on edge with our destination so close at hand. I will retire for the evening. I have to rest. We reach Rome tomorrow. Who knows what will await us there?"
Xin Yan gave them a curt nod and then walked off to her giant tent, leaving Magnus and Alec alone by the fire.
"I suspect Xin Yan may be a no on the rousing fireside sing-along I was planning," said Magnus.
He reached over and ran his fingertips in a light, absent-minded caress along Alec's neck. Alec leaned into his touch. When Magnus's hand dropped, Alec wanted to follow it.
"Don't worry about her," Magnus added. "Many warlocks have tragic childhoods. We come into a world already made dark by demons. It's hard not to give in to the anger."
"You don't," said Alec.
Magnus's voice was bleak.
"I have."
"Xin Yan didn't have to join a cult," said Alec.
"I didn't have to found a cult," Magnus pointed out.
Alec said,
"That's different."
"Sure. It's much worse."
Magnus tossed a twig into the fire and watched as it withered and blackened and then curled into ash. Alec watched him. Magnus Bane was always brightly burning, whimsical and effervescent, ethereal and carefree. He was the high warlock of Brooklyn, who wore blazing colors and shiny glitter around his eyes. He was the sort of person who threw birthday parties for his cat and loved whomever he wanted, loudly and proudly. Only there was a dark waiting behind the brightness. Alec had to learn that side of Magnus, too, or he would never really know him.
"I think I understand about Xin Yan," Alec said slowly. "I wondered why you were insisting on bringing her with us.
I even thought maybe you didn't want to be alone with me. Alec held out a hand. But then I realized. You feel like she's your responsibility, don't you? If the Crimson Hand hurt her, then you feel like you have to help her to make it right. Magnus nodded slightly. She's my dark mirror, Alexander, he said. She is in some ways what I could have been had I not been lucky enough to have experienced love and caring, my mother's, and then Ragnar and the Silent Brothers. I could have been so desperate I too could have joined something like the Crimson Hand. You don't talk much about the past, Alec said slowly. You didn't even tell me you were close to that warlock who died. Ragnar fell. You were, weren't you? I was, said Magnus. He was the first friend I ever had. Alec looked down at his hands. Jace had been the first friend he'd ever had, but Magnus knew that. Magnus knew everything about him. He was an open book. He tried to crush down the feeling of hurt. So, why not tell me? The sparks from the campfire flew upward, brief stars flaring against the black night, then winked out. Alec wondered if loving a mortal was like that to Magnus, bright but brief. Maybe this was all just a short, insignificant episode in a long, long story. He wasn't just an open book, he thought. He was a short one. A slim volume compared to the chronicles of Magnus's long life. Because nobody ever really wants to know, said Magnus. Usually I get no further than mentioning I killed my stepfather and people decide that's enough. You've already seen too much. Last night, he saw the red scrolls of magic. All the stupid, careless things I said, hidden behind a blood-stained altar. Can you blame me if I wonder every time whether this is the time I scare you away? Shadowhunters don't scare easily, Alec said. I know you feel guilty about Shinyan being taken in by the cult, but you meant it for the best. That's what I thought when I read the Red Scrolls. You didn't say to recruit the kids, to use them. You said not to let them be alone. You were alone. And you didn't want other warlock children to suffer like you did. I came on this trip to get to know you better. And I am. I'm sure you've learned more than you wanted to, said Magnus quietly. I learned you see snarling animals in cages and you try to pet them. Your friend died, and you didn't even tell me you knew him, but you tried to comfort a vampire about it. You're always trying to help people. Me and my friends so many times, and Rafael Santiago of all people, and now Shinyan and other warlock kids, and probably loads of people I don't even know about yet. But I know this much. I looked at the Red Scrolls of Magic, and I saw you trying to help children. That part sounded like you. Magnus laughed, an uneven sound. Was that what you meant? I thought you meant something else. He closed his eyes. I don't want this not to work because of me, he confessed. I don't want to shatter what we have by telling you something that will drive you away. How much truth do you really want, Alexander? I want all of it, said Alec. Magnus turned his eyes, brighter than firelight, on Alec, and held out his hand. Alec took his hand firmly, drew in his breath, and braced himself. His heart thundered in his chest, and his stomach twisted. He waited. He said. Aren't you going to do some magic that shows me your past?
Oh, heavens no, said Magnus. That whole business was traumatic enough to live through once. I was just going to talk about it. I wanted to hold your hand.
Oh, said Alec. Well, good. Magnus slid in close. Alec could feel the heat radiating off his skin. The warlock bowed his head as he gathered his thoughts. He made a few false starts at speaking, and each time, he gripped Alec's hand tighter.
I'd like to think my mother loved me, said Magnus. All I remember is that she was so sad. I always felt as if I had to learn some trick to figure out how to do better. I thought I could prove myself, and she would be happy. and I'd be good enough. I never learned the trick. She hanged herself in the barn. My stepfather burned the barn to the ground and built a shrine to her in the ashes. He didn't know exactly what I was. I didn't know exactly what I was. But he knew I was not his. He knew I was not human. One day, when the air was hot as soup, I was sleeping and woke to hear him calling me. Magnus smiled as if his heart was broken. He used my old name, the one my mother gave me. There is nobody left alive who knows that name now. Alec held Magnus's hand even tighter, as if he could rescue him, centuries too late. You don't have to say anything more, he whispered. Not if you don't want to. I want to, said Magnus, but his voice wavered as he continued. My stepfather hit me a few times, and then hauled me by the neck to the burnt ruins of the barn. There was still a blackened rope hanging from a rafter. I could hear the water of the creek running. My stepfather grabbed me by the nape of my neck and pushed my head into the water. And just before he did, he spoke to me. And he sounded gentler than I'd ever heard him sound before. He said, "This is to purify you. Trust me." Alec's breath caught. He found he could not stop holding it, as if he could save it for the child Magnus had been. I don't remember what happened after that. One minute I was drowning. There was a pause. Magnus held his hands up. His voice was devoid of emotion. The next, I burned my stepfather alive. The campfire erupted into a column of flame, roiling in a funnel that shot halfway up to heaven. Alec threw an arm in front of Magnus to shield him from the scorching blast. The pillar of flame died away almost at once. Magnus did not even seem to notice the giant column of fire he had created. Alec wondered if Shin Yun had woken up, but if she had, there was no sign. Maybe she slept with earplugs in. I ran away, Magnus continued. I was in hiding until I crossed paths with the Silent Brothers. They taught me how to control my magic. I was always fonder of shadow hunters than most warlocks because your Silent Brothers saved me from myself. I still thought I was a demon's child and could never be anything more. I'd never met another warlock, but Ragnar Fell had ties to a shadow hunter family. The Silent Brothers arranged for him to come and teach me. I was the first pupil he ever had. Later, he tried to teach shadow hunter children about magic and not to fear us. He said all his pupils were terrible, but I was the worst. He complained constantly. Nothing ever made him happy. I loved him very much. Magnus's mouth twisted as he stared intently into the flames. A little while later, I met my second friend, Katarina Loss. Some mundanes were trying to burn her at the stake. I intervened.
I knew I was going to find out about you saving more people, said Alec.
Magnus gave a soft, surprised huff of laughter. Alec caught Magnus's upraised hands in his own, warming them and holding them steady, drawing Magnus closer to him. Magnus did not resist, and Alec enveloped him in a tight embrace. He locked his arms around Magnus's slim body, felt their chests rising and falling against each other, and held him fast. Magnus let his head drop onto Alec's shoulder.
You saved yourself, Alec said into Magnus's ear. You saved yourself, and then you saved so many people. You couldn't have saved anyone if you hadn't saved yourself. I would never have found you.
Alec had been right about the darkness waiting in Magnus, and the pain waiting with it. All that darkness, and all that pain, and Magnus was somehow still a blazing riot of life and color, a source of joy for everyone around him. He was the reason Alec looked into a mirror now and saw a complete person who did not have to hide. They stayed locked together, the fire beside them dying. All was quiet. Alec held on.
Don't worry so much. It's just a tiny little cult, he said eventually. Nothing we can't handle.
He felt Magnus's mouth curve, pressed against Alec's cheek.
as Magnus smiled. Part 3. City of War. When Rome falls, the world shall fall. Lord Byron. Chapter 18. The Treasures That Prevail. There was no other city like Rome, Magnus thought, as the domes of the basilicas first appeared on the horizon. Of course, he could say the same about many cities. That was one of the advantages of living forever. There were always new wonders of the world. There was nothing like Tokyo, with its duality of culture and technology. There was nothing like Bangkok, with its metropolis that spanned as far as the eye could see. There was nothing like Chicago jazz and deep dish pizza. And there was nothing as uniquely spectacular as Rome, the golden eternal city. Magnus and Alec had fallen asleep next to the fire under the open sky. They awoke to birds chirping and the pre-dawn light heralding the new day. It was honestly one of the best mornings Magnus had ever had. His only regret was that they hadn't gotten to use the pavilion he'd conjured. In fact, he didn't think Alec had even set foot inside the tent. It was a pity. Magnus was very proud of his work, but there was always next time. He felt refreshed and his mission was clear. Wrap up this cult business, return to romantic vacation. The Crimson Hand were in Rome. Magnus would find them, and whomever was leading them, and he would have many stern words and painful spells for that cult-stealing, vacation-ruining, greater demon-summoning lunatic. He was fairly confident about his ability to face down almost any other warlock in the world, even Barnabas, especially Barnabas. Even if the cult was deranged enough to be in communication with Asmodeus, Magnus was pretty sure they hadn't actually raised him yet. He just thought there was no way, if his father walked the earth, that he wouldn't have already made himself known to Magnus. Maybe this could all be over soon. Magnus folded and banished all of the camping supplies to whence they had come. Xinyan did the same, and they climbed into the Maserati. "Don't bother with the map," he told Alec airily. "All roads lead to Rome." Alec grinned at him. "The map definitely doesn't agree." It was only about 2 hours, and soon enough they were struggling their way through the streets of Rome, where the low, wide lines of the Maserati were less of a stylish grace note and more of a target for the fleets of scooters and tiny Fiat swarming them from all sides. Rome had some of the worst traffic patterns Magnus knew, and Magnus had seen some bad traffic patterns in his day. They checked into a suite at the Palazzo Manfredi, a boutique hotel across the street from the Roman Colosseum, where, without any actual discussion, they unanimously agreed to sleep in comfortable beds with fancy sheets in climate-controlled, beautiful hotel rooms until the evening. Even Xinyan seemed bone-weary, heading for the room adjacent to theirs with hardly a word. Alec whistled when they walked into their suite. He dumped his luggage to the side, leaned his bow against the wall, and sprawled full length on the soft red velvet of the luxuriously wide sofa. Magnus cast a few protective spells toward them as they slept, then joined Alec on the sofa, climbing over one arm and crawling on top of the Shadow Hunter like Chairman Meow would have if they were home. He draped himself across Alec's body, tucked his face into the curve of Alec's neck, and inhaled the scent of him. Alec's arm went around Magnus's back, stroking a shoulder blade. Magnus dropped a kiss on the underside of Alec's jaw and rubbed his cheek lightly against the rough scrape of Alec's 2-day stubble. He felt Alec draw in a shuddering breath. "You smell amazing," Alec whispered. "Why? Why do you always smell amazing?" Magnus mumbled, delighted but fighting sleep. "It's sandalwood, I think." "It's great," Alec whispered. "Come and hold me. I want you next to me." Magnus glanced up at him. Alec's eyes were closed and he was breathing deeply. "Come and hold me. I want you next to me." Maybe it was easier for Alec to say things like that when he was half asleep. It hadn't occurred to Magnus that Alec might feel self-conscious saying things like that. He thought Alec didn't want to say them.
Magnus did as requested and curled his body around Alex. Their legs tangled together. Magnus traced a forefinger across Alex's cheek, down to his mouth. Alex's lashes were long, thick, and dark, curving to touch the tops of his cheekbones. His lips were full and soft, his hair a tumble of rough black silk. He looked vulnerable in a way that was hard to square sometimes with the cold-eyed, arrow-slinging warrior he became in battle. He thought about waking Alec up and suggesting they go into the bedroom. He could kiss that full, soft mouth, mess up that silky hair even further. He brushed his lips over Alec's cheek, closing his eyes. He opened them to late afternoon sun shining through a floor-to-ceiling window and cursed his own exhaustion. Who knew how many hours had passed, and Alec was no longer on the couch with him. He found Alec on the balcony, with a spread on the table of charcuterie, cheeses, breads, and fruits. Alec lifted a champagne flute toward him. "Alexander Lightwood," said Magnus in admiration. "Well played." Alec swirled the glass, his silly grin the only crack in his debonair attitude. "Prosecco?" The balcony was like a cup of warm sunlight. They sat there, and Magnus sent messages to everyone he could think of, asking if anyone had seen Barnabas Hale around. He also ate maybe a pound and a half of cured meat. Taking an early light dinner with Alec, even though they had to hurry, felt almost domestic. "He should move in with me," he thought. No, too soon. Maybe when it's been a year. Magnus was in the shower when he heard Alec's raised voice in the living room. He hastily snatched a vast, cloud-like towel and swathed it around his hips, hurrying into the suite's drawing room in case Alec was being attacked by another demon. Alec and Xin Yun, seated on opposite ends of the couch, both froze. Xin Yun quickly looked away. Alec stared. Magnus realized he had burst into the middle of the living room wearing only a towel, his wet hair dripping onto his bare torso. Awkward. Magnus waved, snapped his fingers, and was instantly wearing a burgundy t-shirt with a plunging V-neck, a jaunty silk scarf, and a pair of skinny jeans. He padded barefoot over to Alec's side and pressed a light kiss against Alec's burning cheek. Only then did he turn to acknowledge Xin Yun. "Good afternoon. Prosecco?"
"I'm leaving," said Xin Yun.
"Like forever?" said Alec hopefully.
"Most people don't find the sight of me half-nude that alarming," said Magnus. "Several heads of state have deemed it a privilege."
Alec rolled his eyes. He seemed more than a little tense. Maybe he should book them some massages, Magnus thought.
"I have some contacts in Rome who won't want to talk to a shadow hunter," Xin Yun said. "Also, I've been trapped in a car with you for the better part of 2 days. I need a break. No offense."
"None taken," said Alec. "Off you go."
"Do you want coffee?" asked Magnus, feeling a little bad. "I cannot stay," said Xin Yun.
"She can't stay," said Alec. "You heard her. She has to go."
Xin Yun gave Magnus what he recognized as a sarcastic imitation of his own wave of greeting and left. Magnus turned his head toward Alec and into a kiss. Alec had moved as only a shadow hunter could move, swift and silent. He was in front of Magnus now, pulling off his own shirt, then sliding his hands up Magnus's arms, kissing him, deep and desperate, and oh, he'd gotten really good at this in a short amount of time. He broke the kiss only to unknot Magnus's scarf and pull Magnus's t-shirt up and over his head. He threw the shirt in the direction of the window. Magnus dropped kisses on Alec's face, on his hands, urging him along in every way he could. It was like being in the center of a wonderful whirlwind. Alec's hands skimmed up the muscles of Magnus's back, along his sides, over his shoulders, in restless, avid motion. Magnus staggered back, needing something to keep him upright. His back hit the wall.
"Sorry," Alec said, looking suddenly worried. Everything all right, Magnus?"
Alec hovered, eyes wild, and Magnus reached out, lacing his fingers through Alec's hair and tugging him back into the embrace.
"It is all right, yes," he murmured. "I love it. I love you. Come here."
Alec flung himself back into the embrace, kissing and sucking at Magnus's lower lip, the intoxication of bare skin against bare skin making them both dizzy. Magnus slid his palm down Alec's stomach, the ridges of muscle hard and clear under his hand. Alec made a low, desperate sound against Magnus's mouth as Magnus started to undo his jeans.
"Magnus, yes," he whispered. "Please, yes."
Magnus realized his hand was shaking even as the zipper came down and Alec's head went back. His eyes were closed as they had been the night before, his beautiful lashes fluttering, this time in pleasure, his lips parted. He whispered,
"Wait."
Magnus pulled back instantly, his heart pounding. He held up both hands and then put them behind his back.
"Of course," he said. "We can wait as long as you want."
Alec reached to have Magnus back as if by instinct. Then his hands fell by his side and he clenched them into fists. His eyes traveled over Magnus before he wrenched his gaze away. Magnus looked at the severe lines of his face and thought of the relentlessness of angels.
"I want this," said Alec, his voice despairing. "I want you more than I've ever wanted anything in my life, but we're in this together. You're worried about the cult, and I don't want to be just grabbing some time when Shinyan isn't around, when you're unhappy."
Magnus didn't think he'd ever been more touched by a speech someone had made while zipping up their pants.
"I want to get this resolved," Alec said, yanking on his shirt. "I should go."
Magnus picked up his t-shirt from where it lay in the heat beside the window. He tugged the shirt on and stared out at the flowing curves and lines of the Colosseum, where men had fought long years before even he was born.
"I wish you could stay," he said softly, "but you're right.
At least kiss me goodbye, though." Alec had an odd expression on his face, almost as if someone had hurt him, but not quite. The blue eyes Magnus so loved were almost black. He crossed the floor in one bound and pressed Magnus up against the window, pushing up Magnus's shirt so Magnus's back was against the sun-warmed glass. He kissed him, slow and leisurely this time, tasting of regret. Sounding drunk, Alec murmured,
"Yes. Yes. No, no, I need to go to the Rome Institute."
He backed away from Magnus and picked up his bow, twisting it between his hands as if he had to be holding something.
"If there are any unusual cult or demonic activities going on, the Institute will know. We have to use every means at our disposal. We can't take the time. We've already slept all day. Who knows how much further the cult could have gotten in those hours? I have to go."
Magnus wanted to be annoyed at Alec for his balking. The problem was that the urgency Alec was describing was a real, true fact.
"Whatever you think is best," he said.
"Right," said Alec.
"Right. I'm going. You stay. Be safe. Don't let anyone else into the suite. Don't go anywhere without me. Promise me?"
Magnus had walked infernal realms and hallucinations caused by demon poisons, been homeless and hungry in streets that were now ruins, been desperate enough to set water ablaze, been extremely drunk in the desert. He did not think doom was coming for him in an upscale hotel in Rome. But he loved Alec for worrying.
"We can pick up where we left off," Magnus said, leaning back against the windowsill. "You know, when you get back."
He smiled a slow and wicked smile. Alec made a hopeless, senseless gesture to himself, then toward Magnus. His hand eventually calmed to stillness. He started to speak, visibly reconsidered talking, shook his head, strode toward the door, and stalked out of the room. 1 second later, the door banged open and Alec came back inside.
"Or maybe I should stay."
Magnus opened his mouth, but Alec had already shut his eyes, let his head fall against the back of the door with a thump, and answered himself.
"No, I'm going to go. I'm going. Bye."
He waved at Magnus. Magnus snapped his fingers. Keys landed glittering in the hollow of his hand, and he threw them at Alec. Alec caught them reflexively. Magnus winked. "Take the Maserati," he said, "and hurry back."
Chapter 19. Bound in Heaven.
Alec took the corners of the tangled streets of Rome too fast. He was going to miss the Maserati. He already missed Magnus. He kept thinking of how Magnus had looked when he'd come out of the bathroom, skin warm from the shower, towels swathed around his narrow hips, strong muscles and flat stomach sparkling with water drops. His dark hair had been barely dry, sunlight falling on him, golden and soft. Alec often liked Magnus best this way, silky hair free of gel or spikes. It wasn't that he didn't like Magnus's clothes, but Magnus wore them like armor, a layer of protection between him and a world that didn't always meet someone like him with open arms. He couldn't think about anything else that had happened in that room. He'd already turned the car to go back to the hotel 3 times. The last time, he'd reversed in a narrow lane and scraped up one side of the Maserati. He wished Magnus could have come with him to the Institute. Alec was surprised to find himself restless and uneasy without Magnus in his direct line of sight. They'd been together all the time since they'd left New York, and Alec had gotten used to it. He wasn't worried about another demon attack, or at least not that worried. He knew the hotel room was warded with Magnus's magic, and Magnus had promised to stay in the hotel room. It was strange. He missed New York. He missed Jace and Isabel and Mom and Dad and even Clary. But he missed Magnus most of all. And he had only been apart from Magnus for 30 minutes. He wondered what Magnus would think when they got home about Alec moving in. Like all institutes, the Rome Institute was accessible only to Nephilim. Like many of them, this one was glamored to appear as an old church fallen into disuse. Because Rome was one of the most densely populated cities in Europe, there was extra magic layered on the glamour so that not only would the Institute look to be in poor condition, most mundanes would neglect to notice it at all and forget about it a moment later if they did. This was a pity, because the Rome Institute was one of the more beautiful in the world. It resembled many of the other basilicas in the city, with domed tops, tall arches, and marble columns, but as if viewed in one of those funny mirrors that elongated the reflection. The Institute had a narrow base sandwiched between 2 squat buildings. Once it rose past its neighbors, it blossomed and fanned out into several domes and towers, like a candelabra or a tree. The resulting profile was both distinctly Roman and pleasantly organic. Alec found a parking spot nearby, but he felt a strong temptation to stay in the car and read the red scrolls of magic for a while longer. He'd already noticed a few differences between the copy they'd found in Venice and the pages Isabel had sent. Instead, he made his way to the Institute door. Looking up at the imposing edifice, he dreaded all the strangers inside it, even though they were fellow shadow hunters. He wanted his parabatai. He would have given a lot for a familiar face.
"Hey, Alec!" a voice behind him called. "Alec Lightwood!"
Alec turned and scanned the line of stores on the other side of the street. He found his familiar face at a small round table in front of a cafe.
"Aline!" he called in surprised recognition. "What are you doing here?"
Aline Penhallow was looking at him over a coffee cup. Her black hair fluttered at her jawline. She was wearing her aviator sunglasses, and she was beaming. She looked a lot better than the last time Alec had seen her. He and his family had been staying at the Penhallows' manor the night the wards fell in Alicante, the night Max had died.
"I had to get away from things for a bit. They're rebuilding in Idris, but it's still a mess. My mom's in the thick of it." "That's right, she's the new consul. Congratulations."
Alec couldn't even imagine how Gia Penhallow must feel, being chosen by all the Nephilim to be closest to the angel and charged with carrying out their mandate. He'd always liked Aline's mother, a calm, clever warrior from Beijing. She could do so much good now. Being the leader of the Shadowhunters meant being able to make changes, and Alec was becoming more and more aware the world needed changing. He crossed the street and jumped the rope encircling the cafe tables.
"Thanks. How about you?" Aline asked. "What are you doing here? And where did you get your incredibly sweet ride?"
"Long story," said Alec.
"How's everyone back in New York?" asked Aline. "Doing all right?"
The last time they'd seen each other had been not long after Max's funeral.
Yeah, Alex said quietly. We're all right. How about you?
Can't complain, said Aline. Is Jace with you?
No, said Alec.
He wondered if Aline was asking for a specific reason. Aline and Jace had kissed in Alicante before the war. Alec tried to think of what Isabel usually said to girls about Jace. The thing is, he added, Jace is a beautiful antelope who has to be free to run across the plains.
What?
Said Aline. Maybe Alec had gotten that wrong.
Jace is home with his new girlfriend. You remember Clary?
Alec hoped Aline was not too heartbroken.
Oh, right, the short redhead, she said.
Aline was tiny herself, but refused to ever admit it.
You know, Jace was so sad before the war. I thought he must have a forbidden love. I just didn't think it was Clary, for obvious reasons. I thought it was that vampire.
Alec coughed. Aline offered him a sip of her latte.
No, he said when he got his voice back. Jace is not dating Simon. Jace is straight. Simon is straight.
I totally saw scars on Jace's neck, Aline said. He let that vampire bite him. He brought him to Alicante. I thought, classic Jace. Never makes a mess when a total catastrophe will do. Wait, did you think I wanted a ride on that disaster train?
Yes, said Alec. As a loyal parabatai, he was starting to find Aline's tone a little insulting.
I mean, Jace is empirically very cute, and I have always liked blondes, and I do like Jace, she said. He's been great to me, very understanding, but I hope he's very happy with his whatever, or that vampire, or whomever.
He's called Simon, said Alec.
Right, of course, said Aline.
She fiddled with her cup for a moment, not looking at Alec, then added,
I saw you and your downworlder. You know, in the Accords Hall.
There was silence, awkwardness hanging like the haze in the air. Alec remembered kissing Magnus under the eyes of the angel and everyone he loved, and also hundreds of complete strangers. His hands had been shaking. He'd been so scared to do it, but more scared that he would lose Magnus, that one of them might die without Magnus ever knowing how Alec felt about him. He couldn't read Aline's face. He'd always gotten along with Aline, who was quieter than Isabel and Jace. He'd always felt they understood each other. Perhaps Aline could not understand him now.
That must have been terrifying, she said at last.
It was, Alec said reluctantly.
Now that you've done it, are you happy? Aline asked, tentatively.
Alec did not know if she was simply curious, or if, like his dad, she thought that Alec's life would be better if he kept hiding.
It's hard sometimes, said Alec, but I'm very happy.
A tiny, uncertain smile flickered across Aline's face.
I'm glad you're happy, she said eventually. Are you still together? Or is it all, oh, now he knows you like him back, he doesn't like you as much. Maybe it was all about the lure of what he couldn't have. Do you ever worry about that?
Not before right this moment, Alec snapped. Aline shrugged.
Sorry. I think maybe I'm just not very romantic. I've never understood why people get so worked up about relationships.
Alec used to feel the same. He remembered the first time Magnus kissed him, and every cell of his body thrilled to a new song. He remembered the sensation of the pieces of the world finally fitting together in a way that made sense.
Well, said Alec, we're still together. We're on vacation. It's great.
He shot Aline a challenging glare, then thought of Magnus and added more softly,
he's great. So why are you at the Rome Institute when you're meant to be on vacation?
Aline asked. Alec hesitated.
Can I trust you? He asked. Can I really trust you? I mean it. I trust you with my life, but can I trust you with more than my life?
That got serious fast,
said Aline with a grin, which faded as she took in Alec's grim expression. She bit her lip.
Your fight is my fight,
she said. You can trust me. Alec gazed at her for a long moment. Then he explained as much as he could that there was a cult called the Crimson Hand, that he'd gone to a warlock's party in search of information, that the fairy girl he'd seen making out with a vampire girl there had turned out to be a shadow hunter called Helen Blackthorn, that the shadow hunters at the Rome Institute might have been alerted to be suspicious of Alec. I need to find out if there's been any sign of cult activity in Rome, he said, but I can't tell anyone else in the Institute what I'm looking for. Aline absorbed this. He could see the questions in her eyes, but she pressed her lips together. Okay, she said at last. Let's go check out the logged demonic activity in the last few weeks. I'll just say that my friend, a hero of the war, has dropped by to visit me. I think some more visitors are due. With any luck, everyone will be too busy to ask any questions. Alec gave her a grateful look. Aline was kind. If your warlock is doing something evil, we're going to have to cut off his head, Aline added. Aline was kind, but perhaps not very tactful. He's not, said Alec. If I'm a hero of the war, so is he. He saw Aline process this. She nodded, finished her coffee, and paid her bill. Alec took her hand as they stepped over the ropes of the cafe together. They passed through the giant golden double entry doors of the Rome Institute and proceeded into the atrium. Alec whistled. This was one of the larger institutes in the world. Alec had heard it described as ornate, but this turned out to be a significant understatement. It was an assault on the eyes, far too much to take in at once. There were beautiful and intricate designs and artworks everywhere he looked. The half-dozen statues on the left wall, the lifelike carvings on the right, the mesmerizing gold and silver tiled dome several stories above them. Words were inscribed across the ceiling in Latin. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. They modeled it after St. Peter's Basilica, noted Aline as she led them through the vestibule and down the side arcade. Aline already knew her way around. She led him around the side passages, avoiding the more heavily trafficked main corridors. They went up a gilded spiral staircase, past at least 10 more statues and a few dozen frescoes, before reaching a glass door. We have to go through the training room to get to the records room, said Aline. I hope there won't be anyone inside, but if there is, we'll brazen it out. Okay, said Alec. Aline hit the glass door with her fist and cheerfully called out, Hero of the war coming through! Who? Yelled a dozen voices at once. Someone else shouted, Is it Jace Herondale? By the angel, please let it be Jace Herondale, said another voice. Alec and Aline walked into a room as bright as a greenhouse, marble gleaming on the floor between practice mats, and more than a dozen shadow hunters all in their gear. There were targets set up on the wall farthest from them, with arrows in the outer rings. Clearly, the Italian shadow hunters needed to practice more, but Alec did not see why it had to be right then. A girl at the front of the group sagged in disappointment. Oh, it's not Jace Herondale. It is just some guy. Alec gave it 2 minutes before they processed their disappointment and started asking questions. There were too many of these people. He could not give them any answers. He took a deep breath and drew his bow. He told himself not to worry about all the people, or about the cult, or about Magnus. He taught himself focus over many long nights practicing his archery. Once he understood that Jace and Isabel were always going to fling themselves into danger, and he would have to cover them. He could not do that with voices in his head warning him that he would fail, that his father would never be proud of him the way the Clave was of Jace, that he wasn't good enough. He fired 5 arrows into the 5 targets. Each one was a bullseye. He put his bow away. I'm not Jace Herondale, he said, but I've learned to keep up. There was a hush. Alec took the opportunity to walk to the other end of the room and recover his arrows. While he was at it, he took every arrow he found in the targets. He had a feeling he might need them. Practice more, guys, Aline suggested. We're going to the records room now. Great, said a voice from the back of the group, because I'd like to talk to Alexander Lightwood in private. Helen Blackthorn stepped away from the crowd and stood, her arms crossed,
staring Alec down. Aline froze. Alec's first impulse was to run and jump out the window. Then he remembered how high above the ground they were. Helen herded him into the records room, which jutted out from the side of the institute, so there were windows on all sides and only one door. Aline followed them. She had gone entirely quiet and was being no help. Leon Verloc came too, giving Alec a little wave. Helen stood in front of the only exit and said,
"So, Alec, first you refused to come to Rome to answer questions, then you hightailed it out of Venice from the scene of a murder, and head for Rome under your own steam."
"Don't forget all the property damage," Alec said.
Helen did not look amused, though Aline smiled a little.
"What do you know about the Crimson Hand?"
Helen demanded.
"Where is Magnus Bane? What happened in Venice?"
Helen was clearly about to level several more questions when Aline waved a hand in between them.
"Excuse me." "What?"
Helen seemed to notice her for the first time. Their eyes met.
"Hey,"
said Aline. There was a momentary pause.
"Hi,"
said Helen. More silence followed.
Sorry, said Alec. "I was too busy getting interrogated to make proper introductions. Helen Blackthorn, Aline Penhollow. Aline, this is Helen."
"And I'm Leon," said Leon.
Aline did not even glance at him. Helen kept staring at Aline. Alec wondered if his friendship with Aline would bring suspicion on her as well.
"Right,"
Helen said at last.
"Anyway, back to the questions. I have a question too,"
said Aline and swallowed.
"Who do you think you are, Helen Blackthorn? And why are you talking to my friend, a shadow hunter and a recent hero of the war for Alicante, as if he's a common criminal?" "Because he's being incredibly suspicious,"
Helen snapped back.
"Alec is very honorable,"
Aline said loyally.
"He would never do anything suspicious."
"He's traveling with Magnus Bane, who is rumored to be the head of a cult responsible for the slaughter of many fairies and mundanes," said Helen. "Our only lead was a former cult member called Mori Shu, and Mori Shu was found dead at a party that Magnus Bane and Alec were attending. Also at that party, the whole house fell down."
"That does sound suspicious when you put it like that,"
Aline admitted. Helen nodded.
"Nevertheless, there's an explanation for everything," said Aline.
"What is it?" Helen asked.
"Well, I don't know," said Aline, "but I'm sure there is one."
Helen and Aline were glaring at each other. Helen, who was taller than Aline, looked down her nose at her. Aline's eyes narrowed.
"Clearly neither of you like me much," said Helen. "I don't care about that. What I care about is solving a murder and destroying a demonic cult. And for some reason, you are both standing in my way."
"If Alec was doing something wrong," Leon put in, "why would he save our lives in Paris?"
Aline darted a glance at Alec.
"You saved their lives in Paris?"
she said out of the corner of her mouth. Alec nodded.
"Great job," said Aline, and turned back to Helen.
"Exactly. A fine point made by, what's his name?"
"Leon," said Leon.
Aline paid no attention. She was entirely focused on Helen.
"So your position is, Alec saved your life, is a war hero, but is also supporting an evil murderous cult?"
"I don't think he's evil,"
said Helen.
"I think he's been seduced and taken in by the evil leader of a demonic cult."
"Oh,"
said Aline. Her eyes had fallen away from Helen's at the word seduced.
"Magnus has nothing to do with that cult," Alec argued.
"While we were in Venice, I heard that Magnus Bane founded the cult,"
said Helen.
"Can you explain that?"
Alec was silent. Helen's hard blue-green gaze softened.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"I understand you trust Magnus Bane. I get it. I do.
I trust Malcolm Fade and many others. I have no reason to distrust downworlders, as you might well understand.
But you have to see this looks bad."
"Magnus didn't do anything,"
Alec said stubbornly.
"Really?"
asked Helen.
"And where is he? While you storm the Rome Institute on his behalf?"
"He's back at the hotel," said Alec. "He's waiting for me."
"Really?"
Helen said.
"Are you sure?"
"I'm sure."
Alec pulled out his phone. He called the hotel and asked to be put through to his room. He stood and waited as the phone rang and rang. and nobody answered.
"Maybe he's gone out for a sandwich," suggested Leon.